This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Green TCR Phytosome Formula from Purity Products. It's the power of three of nature's top superfoods, a clinically tested green tea plus curcumin and resveratrol, all in one simple capsule. It's clinically proven to support your energy, vitality, and cardiovascular function. The secret behind Green TCR is its phytosome matrix, which boosts its green tea power by over 200% compared to regular green tea. Our friends at Purity Products have a free bottle for you to put to the test. Just pay $4.95 for shipping. Experience the power of this trio and see how good you can feel. Call 1-800-218-6030. That's 1-800-218-6030. Call now. As these move fast, dial 1-800-218-6030. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and for some of you, welcome to January, if you're just joining us. This is a weekly podcast wherein we answer your questions. Your questions come to us via this address, radioprogram@AOL.com. There's no such thing as a stupid question. We generally prefer questions related to health conditions and the nutritional or integrative management thereof. Mm-hmm. But everything is fair game. Unless you have a very, very complicated medical history, we're not going to solve your medical conundrum for you.
And we don't do consults on podcasts. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. And this is Layla. Layla Mutin is our nutritionist in residence. And she continues in 2019 in the great tradition of offering great advice and giving me a lifeline when we get stumped with challenging questions here. So let's, before we get to questions, mm-hmm. Did you happen to see the Golden Globes? I know you're not a big TV watcher.
I'm not a big TV watcher, except, and even less so lately.
Except for binge watching on, you know, certain
like
programs.
Like on Netflix or something.
Okay, I was on a plane. I went to Belgium.
Oh, yeah.
I was, you know, I was stuck on a plane. And, you know, there are a couple of options. One, you can completely anesthetize yourself with alcohol, which I didn't do.
Good.
And also, I wasn't in first class, so I couldn't, like, you know.
Take advantage of the champagne.
The champagne wagons, you know. Uh-huh.
Recline.
I was sitting close to first class, and it's just champagne. Yeah. The other thing you can do is you can sleep. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can do is binge watch, because on Delta Airlines, there's a marvelous selection of movies and TV series. So I got into The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Have you started watching
that? That's wonderful. Yeah. I watched season one. I waited with bated breath for season two. And I'm taking it in very small doses because I want it to last.
Right. It's sort of like my
marvelous
childhood. Yeah. Mm. And it sort of reconstructs what it was like in the 50s. You know, it's a little telling. You, however, you have to sort of imagine that because you weren't around then.
No, but you know, Amy Sherman Palladino, the creator of that series, also created Gilmore Girls.
Okay.
For anyone listening, I was a huge fan of the Gilmore Girls.
What's that?
Which was
a
another
nostalgia
series.
Thing?
It was another series. Okay. This quirky little town in Connecticut and a mother and daughter and their relationship with everybody in the community. It was just lovely. It was a lot of banter, a lot of fast talking, a lot of what you see on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But it's just wonderful, that show. It's wonderful to see the Palladinos back and writing. They were actually kicked off Gilmore Girls towards the end, and that was sad. Anyway.
So what this has to do with nutrition, I'm not sure, but there's a segue from a segue where I was talking about the Golden Globes.
Yes.
And so the Golden Globes was kind of a mishmash of, you know, some jokes were funny, some jokes just fell flat. You know, I had to change the channel after about an hour. Mm-hmm. But towards the end of my watching, something utterly bizarre happened. You know, they have like product placement for different things there. You know, they give these grab bags of different things, you know, with different products to the stars. You know, sometimes amounting to thousands of dollars worth of goodies, you know, goodie bags.
They get a lot of gifts.
Yeah, gifts. And it actually, companies vie for the product placement, you know, that they get this, you know, perfume or this body lotion or this whatever, you know, even, you know, small jewelry sometimes.
And so they had a product placement, evidently, I don't know how they wangled this, for the flu shot. So all of a sudden, you know, they said in lieu of, you know, giving you gifts and, you know, whatever, we're going to give you a very special gift, this Golden Globes. And all of a sudden, all these white clad technicians or doctors or nurses came out in a procession, brandishing syringes and needles and rushing amidst the audience, you know, in a kind of a menacing way.
I was going to say that sounds awfully menacing.
It was menacing. Yeah. And the star's reaction was priceless. It was cringeworthy because I don't think anybody, you know, was like, no, I don't want that. You know, and so they said, and all they said something to the effect of, all you anti-vaxxers out there, you can just put a napkin over your head and just, you know, suck it up. But I think there was probably a very low acceptance rate among this elite cadre of Hollywood folks.
I'm going to have to catch that segment on YouTube. Oh, sure it'll be on YouTube later.
It's been.
I just want to see the reactions.
It's been watched by millions.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was funny, and you know it kind of goes to the principle that you know they want you to take the vaccine, but there's not a lot of acceptance of the vaccine. And oh, by the way, every time they tout the vaccine as the best way to avoid the flu, the statistics generally show a relatively poor level of protection. And, you know, and I'm not an anti-vaxxer per se, but, you know, I just want to tell the truth about this. And some studies suggest that merely by taking vitamin D at substantial levels, perhaps 2,000 international units per day, it confers about as much protection as the flu shot or more.
Yeah.
Without the potential downsides. So,
I would say more because the flu shot is what? 10, 15, 25%
effective? From year to year, depends. It's like a roulette wheel, you know. It's like sometimes it's more effective than others. It's hard to know.
Okay.
So,
all right. According to the Centers for Disease Control, you can reduce your chance of getting the flu by hand washing by 50%.
Yeah.
By frequent hand washing, not OCD hand washing.
Yeah.
But you know, wash your hands before you touch your face and do all of that. Especially if you're strap hanging on the subway. You touch things too much. You're shaking a lot of hands.
Coming in from outside, you know.
Exactly. Coming in from outside.
You know, yeah. At your doctor's office, definitely wash your hands.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So let's proceed to questions.
Yeah, we've got actually a comment from, I'm going to use a name here, we don't have a name.
Okay, please, no name.
No name, but please, Dr. Hoffman, aloe vera gel in a bottle is not more natural. It's thickened by adding Irish moss, seaweed. 99% juice is effective.
Okay.
For medical, yeah.
And I will acknowledge that comment because in the past, what I've generally recommended is that the gel seems to be more concentrated. And what are the uses of this? Mostly for gastrointestinal ailments or mouth sores.
Yeah.
It's wonderful as, you know, we keep aloe plants in our kitchens when we get burns and when we have inflammation in the gastrointestinal tract, in the mouth, in the throat, you know, as with GERD or reflux or ulcers, certainly. Even though there's some literature on ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, that it is helpful. The problem is that it's a liquid, so we want it to be sort of more viscous. So what they do is they thicken it, but they thicken it with Irish moss. Now, that's another issue we'll come to in a minute.
Yeah.
What I've realized is that if you want a less adulterated form of it, you can just use the juice. And I recommend that patients take about a quarter cup of the stuff. It tastes not a little funky. And it you just take it on an empty stomach at bedtime, preferably on awakening. Mm-hmm. That's a good time to take it for any, say you have GERD or something like that. I recommend the brand, which is
Lily of the Desert.
Lily of the Desert,
That would be the brand.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, a two-week hiatus with vacation and my memory is, I've got to recharge my memory banks. But yes, Lily of the Desert is the brand we recommend. Now, as to the issue of the badness or innocuousness of the material that is used to make it more gel-like.
Yes.
Because natural gels come from seaweed. But seaweed is a source of carrageenan.
Yeah.
And carrageenan is a little bit like the cross to the vampire these days, you know, in the integrative community. Mm-hmm. So we did a little research on the distinction between Irish moss and carrageenan. First of all, carrageenan earned a reputation as pro-inflammatory through some experiments in the cosmetic industry, where if they want to induce an inflammation in experimental animals, kind of a cruel thing, hold your, you know, put your hands over your ears if you are, you know, animal rights people. They do this in the cosmetic industry. They use animals instead of humans for testing to see if a cosmetic has an irritating effect. What they do is they pre-inject with carrageenan in a rat's paw, and then that creates some inflammation, and then it's injected, not just topically applied. And then they put various cosmetics on there to see if it creates a big flare.
Yeah.
So carrageenan has earned a reputation as something that's pro-inflammatory, carrageenan.
Right.
So there's a distinction between Irish moss and carrageenan?
Irish moss in its natural form can be very therapeutic, according to this writer. It's been a beneficial functional food. It's been used for generations in Ireland as a nourishing tonic. It's the isolation. It's the pulling out of the carrageenan from Irish moss.
So it's industrially processed.
Exactly, like using a potassium hydroxide, which can be caustic.
Right.
Even. So it's that isolating process of the carrageenan that's used even in food-grade carrageenan, which is GRAS, generally recognized
as safe.
But it's been shown to
And I recommend for our patients with ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, perhaps IBS or leaky gut syndrome, that they avoid carrageenan as an ingredient.
Yes.
But I think that, you know, carrageenan is pervasive in a lot of natural products.
That's
it's used in yogurts, it's used in ice cream.
Yes,
it's used
and that's where it's been isolated from seaweed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like you took seaweed and dumped it into yogurt to get the benefit
and
of the carrageenan.
It's natural.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a chemical name, so therefore it's thought to be innocuous. But for patients who have pre-existing inflammation in their gut, I think it's a really bad idea.
Yes, agreed.
So the other thing about aloe is that aloe contains some laxative components.
It does.
And that's the leaf.
Yes.
Not the meat of the leaf. I think it's
the
outer part.
Yes.
And so aloe leaf is actually pretty darn good laxative.
That is.
And you don't want that irritant effect if you're taking aloe for other purposes.
No, exactly.
But Lily of the Desert, I think, has extracted that part. And most responsible manufacturers of aloe will tell you if it's earmarked for laxative purposes or not.
Yes.
The other thing is, as a preservative, they often use what's called sorbic acid, which is a quote, natural preservative. But for some people with GERD, that can be irritating.
Yeah.
You know, they feel a little bit of burning as it goes down. And that's to be avoided. So I think you want a pure aloe gel. The problem is it doesn't, you know, it can go... It can be susceptible to bacterial contamination and fungal contamination because there's no preservative in it.
Right. I want to use something like rosemary as a preservative, but I don't know how well that would go or if it would do the job or something. But not a long shelf life on anything like that. You want to source it well. Okay. All right. Thank you for this note about the Irish moss. Very, very interesting. Okay. We have an email from Tom. Tom writes, about your Intelligent Medicine article, Dr. Hoffman, are organic foods worth the added expense? Tom writes, while the assessed articles have shown differences among organic and conventional foods in favor of organic ones, still the information is limited, and more research needs to be done in order to draw unwavering conclusions that organic food products are superior compared to conventional ones. This seems to state clearly that more research needs to be done in order to validate organic food superiority. What say you?
Well, what I say is that, I see some of the critics of the article. I mean, what he's talking about is the article, which basically, big article, I think it was in The Lancet, which suggests that there's a lower risk of cancer in people who consume organic foods.
Mm.
And so I've seen that article critiqued by people who don't believe in organic foods, that the effect was a very small magnitude, that there were various confounders, that there, you know, whatever. You can take apart any article that you want on the basis of some flaw in the methodology. However, you know, what are we to do? Are we to say, let's wait conclusively for 10 or 20 years.
Let me continue ingesting these herbicides and pesticides and see if it will do anything.
And see if in the future, you know, in 10 or 20 years, it may turn out.
Why would you want that toxic exposure? Right. This is a little more common sense, I would think.
Yeah.
And the cleaner the food, the less your liver has to deal with.
It's when we tell people to eat organic foods, it's not like we're telling people to take some sort of experimental drug.
Yeah.
You know, like, X19.
We're telling them to eat safely.
Yeah.
Really?
It's a fundamental thing. And it also is probably healthier for the environment.
Not to use those particular chemicals.
On the soil, because these chemicals have deleterious effects on the soil composition. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for two reasons. And if you look at the article, two basic reasons. One, you don't want the bad stuff.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there are also several studies suggest that there's a higher level of beneficial nutrients per ounce.
Yes.
In the natural
more
produce.
More phytochemicals, yes.
More phytochemicals because of some, you know, basically because of something called phytoalexins, which is that when plants are subject to stress and parasites and fungi and various things that assail plants, insects, are a challenge. They're an environmental challenge. And when plants build up resistance, they also build up a higher internal content of beneficial phytonutrients, especially the polyphenols, which are actually defense substances against extremes of temperature and environmental challenges.
Right.
So yes. That's in the article. Mm-hmm. If you care to go back to it, it's at drhoffman.com. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've read some of the critiques of this, you know, organic food movement, and I suspect that some of them are underwritten by big agriculture.
Yeah.
You know, big agriculture, which has a big...
They're pushing back. Sure.
Yeah.
They want to be able to use their products.
And they can actually ghostwrite stories for scientists or support the research of scientists who conclude that no problem here. GMOs is fine. Glyphosate is innocuous. Organic foods are a waste of time, blah, blah, blah.
All of that.
And money.
Another thing is, you know, at the end of any scientific research article, there is always the conclusion that the information is limited and more research needs to be done. This keeps the grant funding coming.
Yes.
And
that's
keeps
good, good
these
point.
Research scientists in business so they could do more and more and more research.
We see so many articles where, for example, they'll say, they'll do a study of curcumin on Parkinson's disease or something. It's something hypothetically. And then the article says there may be a very beneficial effect of curcumin on Parkinson's disease. And then there's always this earnest disclaimer that it is, while these results are promising, it is too early to suggest that people take this stuff pending further research.
Mm-hmm.
And this is sort of almost like a mantra that they have to write. Otherwise, they say, what are you, crazy? You're recommending that people take a nutritional supplement? Go there.
No.
You know, so just, you know, show your moderation.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of almost like an etiquette, you know, of the research community. You know, it's like...
to say this isn't altogether conclusive, so...
Right.
You just read all this and...
You just read all this.
Now we just indemnified everything.
And you're rushing the health food store and say, hold on, don't go there yet.
Don't go there.
Yep.
Don't go there. Oh, my. Tom, thank you for your very thoughtful question. Okay. We have an email from Michael. Michael says, let me just say that I love the podcast very much. I'm interested in MSM and the amount you recommend. I have read that 4,500 milligrams to 8,000 milligrams a day is what's needed for it to be effective. I understand the amounts in the pills are not enough for the average person. What is your opinion? And as a corrective criticism, would you please consider using two microphones when both of you are doing a program?
Okay. So let's do a little experiment. We are currently using two microphones.
Yes, and we do every podcast.
So let's do a little experiment. Let's take off our microphones,
and
let's put our microphones in the middle.
Okay.
Okay, as if we're not using two microphones.
Yes.
And I can't tell the difference because I'm not hearing this podcast. But you can actually, this is the effect of the microphone in the middle rather than we having our individual microphones.
And we have our microphones placed on our lapels.
Right.
So it's as close to our faces as possible.
Right. And, you know, this, I mean, maybe there's better recording equipment, but this affords us the flexibility of being able to record anywhere. Mm. So I've literally recorded interviews with people on the, you know, I pulled them to a side room, you know, at a convention or something. I said, let's sit down and talk and let's do a podcast. And, mm-hmm. you know, there'll be ambient noise and maybe the it's not studio quality.
Yeah.
But I think the thrust of it is the spontaneity and the ability to get the information out. So if you find it, there's occasionally issues related to acoustics or the mm-hmm. microphone positioning, you know, sorry about that.
Yeah. So MSM.
MSM.
The I've read that 4,500 milligrams to 8,000 milligrams a day is what's needed. But I understand the amount in pills are not enough for the average person. What is your opinion?
Well, you know, there was this whole thing, and this sort of peaked in the 90s, the use of MSM for rheumatoid arthritis and inflammatory conditions.
Yeah.
And allergies.
Mm-hmm. And detox, maybe?
Right.
Sulfur.
And so I think that there's something to be said for high-dose MSM.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it has to be worked out because there's some people who, it has to do with the microbiome. There's some people who have a proliferation of certain bad bacteria when they take a lot of MSM.
Huh.
Because it's a sulfur, source.
Okay.
And sulfur promotes the growth of certain bacteria that are not happy. So, you know, I think we're coming up with more predictive models about whether certain supplements agree with people based on their stool tests.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some promising ones. Day 2 is one of them. Viome, mm-hmm. I reviewed. I'm not that crazy about Viome these days. You know, that may help us decide if people are good candidates for sulfur. Also, genetic testing showing that sulfur transferase pathways are genetically impaired may tell us whether sulfur is a useful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think MSM has probably waned a little bit in popularity because I'm not seeing a lot of new studies on MSM.
Yeah. I've seen a general dose of about, you know, 500 to 1,000 milligrams twice daily.
That's like a teaspoon.
It's generally what
I've seen. A teaspoon is 5 grams.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the day of rheumatoid arthritis, there's, who's the guy who was in he was the actor who had rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh, Coburn.
Jane Coburn. Thank you. Together we have collaboratively.
We have a brain.
Like, you know, it's almost like, you know,
it's like a dinosaur. What was the name of that?
A dinosaur had a very tiny brain in the head and also in the tail,
uh-huh.
and they somehow coordinated.
Right.
Okay. So, James Coburn. Thank you. Was suffering from rheumatoid arthritis, became a great advocate of high-dose MSM.
Hmm. That's where it started.
Yeah.
60s and, or 70s. Okay.
Also, interestingly, another action hero, Robert Culp, had arthritis and was a big fan of that.
Wow.
And so that kind of dates it, right? You know, that's sort of like, you know, the 90s, 80s kind of mm-hmm. era.
Wow. Okay.
And they were taking massive doses. I think...
a lot.
Coburn was taking like 90 grams, 100 grams a day. So what's that? That's a tablespoon is 15 grams. So do the math. That's like 8 tablespoons a day.
Wow.
Like that.
Huh.
You know.
I wonder if you get any stomach upset from
taking
that much.
Yeah, you could. You know, you could. I mean, I've taken high-dose MSM.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's at a certain point, it's going to cause some laxative effects.
Right, right. Like high dose inositol or something.
Yeah.
Definitely a
laxative. But it's not,
or high dose vitamin C.
It's not extremely caustic or irritating.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good news.
Okay.
Michael.
This person doesn't state the purpose they're taking it for, right?
No. No, they don't. Just a question, that question about MSM.
It's,
what is
it's
the dose?
It's been relegated a little bit as a secondary player. I must say, I do take MSM
mm-hmm.
Daily. I take 1,000 milligrams of MSM twice daily,
mm-hmm.
Just as a general thing.
Yeah.
And
I
take
that's
it,
the
you know, because I
dose.
Suffer from some allergies. And but I haven't seen MSM pop up big on the allergy front, on the inflammation front. I just, you know, it's... Maybe we should revisit that subject and see if we can find any more.
And it's also an adjunct to something like glucosamine chondroitin, fish oil,
which,
arthritis.
By the way, glucosamine sulfate is also a sulfur source.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Michael, thank you.
And chondroitin sulfate, of course, is a sulfur source. That's all we have for part one. We divide these podcasts into two parts. So we invite you to join us in part two. And what are we going to lead off with? What's our next question?
Should my husband take natokinase or lumbrokinase?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting question.
What is that, you ask? Listen to part two.
Indeed. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today with Layla Mudenarts, our weekly Q&A with Layla. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast Series.